Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Let's get busy reconnecting the eternal with the everyday, seeking to prepare ourselves to enter into the conversations of this day in ways that honor Jesus. So one of the folks who has been on with us in the past, her name is Karen Swallow Pryor, and I'm just going to appeal to you right now to send up a little prayer for her. She lives in Virginia, but she was apparently here in Nashville and has been involved in an auto accident and is at the hospital. And so let's just lift up a quick prayer for Karen, recognizing that God is the great physician and he is able to do far more than we ordinarily pause to ask him to do. So, Father God, we lift up our sister Karen and we simply ask that right now you would be in the hands and in the technology and in the medicine being applied to whatever are her physical needs. And Father, we certainly entrust her to you, and we call forth the body of Christ to continue in prayer for those who are hurting, that you might, as the great physician, in all things bring healing. In Jesus' name, amen. So I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to literally stop. If you have committed to pray for somebody on social media, if you've committed to pray for somebody that you're, you know, in passing conversation with, you've asked them how they're doing and they've answered and you say, I'm going to pray for you, I want you to actually just stop and do it. And I think that there's power in our simply calling on the name of Jesus and doing so, following through on what we've committed to do for our brothers and sisters in Christ and for those in need around the world who may not even know him and may not know that he's the answer to every concern in heaven and under heaven. So let me just encourage you to do that today. Okay, I also have, I'm running through a bunch of quick headlines and then we're definitely going to get to our immigration conversation again today. But I wanted to share this with you because I think that oftentimes we stop at the bad news related to things when they happen, and we don't often keep paying attention long enough to see the good news that might come forth from it or the redemptive stories that might be woven throughout it. And so I want to lift up to you a student, a 15-year-old, who died in the Santa Fe High School shooting, which killed 10 people in Texas. This student's name is Christian Riley Garcia, and I want to lift him up to you because he is a young person of remarkable courage and selflessness. Christian Garcia died on Friday because he used his body to physically block the art classroom door, keeping other students safe from the gunshots. And this is reported by his pastor, whose name is Keenan Smith. So Pastor Smith is reporting that Christian Garcia, quote, was holding the door shut while the shooter was trying to gain access into the art room. And as the shooter shot through the door, taking Garcia's life, he gave his life in sacrifice for his friends. And you and I can both recognize there's no greater gift than any of us could ever give, and there's no greater sacrifice that anyone could ever be asked to make. And so we want to be lifting up this family and all the other families who lost young, loved ones in the Santa Fe shooting in Texas, and we want to be mindful that God shows redemptive power in the most horrific of circumstances, and he is able to redeem people and circumstances and situations in ways that you and I would in the midst of it not be able to imagine. His pastor said, I imagine that he made this decision really without thinking about it because this is what would have been in his heart. This is who he was. Smith talked about baptizing Garcia and described him as a fun-loving kid who loved football and enjoyed being outside. And the pastor says he hopes that this young man's brave sacrifice would not only bring comfort to his family, but that God would find a way to use it. He says it doesn't ease the pain. It doesn't stop the void, which will now be there forever. But it does bring a measure of peace. And so he said that Garcia's family is praying and hoping that they would be able, obviously one day to be reunited with their son in heaven, which is just, you know, I don't know how people who don't have the hope of Jesus Christ even even take a breath, let alone a step, let alone walk back into the realities of the world after such tragic loss. So here on Connecting Faith all week this week, we are talking about the subject, focusing on the subject of immigration. We're looking at it from every angle. We're trying to get beyond the rhetoric. We're trying to become equipped to actually enter into the conversation. And so, you know, a couple of today's immigration-related headlines, one from NPR this morning, House GOP preps for June immigration battle. And so you and I are going to be reading and hearing a lot about the immigration debate on Capitol Hill over the course of the next month, as there are those lawmakers who are insisting that something happen on immigration before they allow some other things to happen. And so I would imagine that we are going to see some action on immigration. And so this is a timely conversation for us to be having. Also, just yesterday in the state of Tennessee, Governor Bill Haslam allowed for a measure banning sanctuary cities, ordering ICE compliance and ordering law enforcement to more actively pursue those who are living in the state of Tennessee without documentation. And so in terms of timeliness, it's really timely that we're going to be talking today in the fourth part of the hour. So at three quarters past the hour, we're going to be talking with Rondell Trevino. He's actually a pastor in Tennessee in the city of Memphis, and he works on something called the Immigration Project. And so really looking forward to the conversation with him so we can talk a little bit about what he is hearing from friends of his and members of his congregation who are certainly living with the direct impact and effect of Governor Haslam's action yesterday on this particular item. There's one immigration-related headline I want to deal with here, and just I know we only have a couple of minutes to deal with it, but that I want to deal with because I want to keep us mindful of the headline news, even as we're trying to take a step back and with a deep breath deal with an issue that is really comprehensive and really complicated. The reality is it breaks in the headlines every single day. And so I want to deal with this one. The Fox News headline reads, MS-13 gang member known as Animal sentenced to 40 years in prison over killing a 15-year-old boy. So if you were to read the article, you would discover that this person who was in the United States of America in a way that you and I would regard as fishy. Okay, so there's young people who come across the southern border, and because they are juveniles, we deal with them differently, but especially if they're unaccompanied minors. And so this is part of the complicating part of the conversation. And so I think that these individuals obviously get highlighted in the news because they do really bad things. And this particular individual took the life of a 15-year-old boy in order to join this gang. It was part of his gang initiation. This individual is actually known, he goes by, his alias is Animal, which may remind you that it was just last week that the President of the United States represented the members of this criminal gang as animals. The President has persisted. He has doubled down on that description. In fact, the White House, whitehouse.gov, now actually has a page on the whitehouse.gov website, what you need to know about the violent animals of MS-13. And so the use of this language, I think, is it's certainly provocative. It is, in my view, inflammatory. And I think we need to talk about why it matters. And here's why it matters. Human beings are not animals. Human beings are actually distinct from animals in that we have moral conscience. We are actually created in the image of God. They are not. We have a moral conscience, and we are morally accountable before God. We are moral agents with moral responsibility. Animals are not. And so we must not reduce even the most awful of human beings. Even the most awful of human beings, we must not reduce to the status of animals, lest we absolve them of their moral responsibility under the law and before God. So if we are people who want justice, the only way that you can hold people to account is to consider them moral agents, to consider them people who are actually morally responsible. And if you describe them as animals, you actually strip from them their moral responsibility. We also must not reduce humans to animals, because we don't want to fuel the secular materialistic worldview of Darwinism. Human beings are not just highly evolved animals. We're actually distinct from the animal kingdom in very significant ways. And we are the ones whom God has set over animals as his stewards, his managers of all else that he has made. All right, so I want to be sure that we recognize that when we are talking about immigrants to the United States, and when we're talking about refugees, and we're talking about asylum seekers, the overwhelming majority of these people are law-abiding. The overwhelming majority of these people are law-abiding. And I think that's missed by most people. And I think that most people think that we're talking about a wildly felonious crowd. And we're just not. The statistics just simply don't bear that out. All right, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking with Wheaton professor Danny Carroll about Christians at the border, what the Bible has to say about immigrants, refugees, and human migration. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Hey, friends, and welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Our issue in focus this week, what we're spending all week talking about, are the constellation of concerns surrounding immigration, immigrants, migration, and all of the parts and pieces of those conversations here in the United States of America. And today, my conversation partner is Dr. Daniel Carroll. He's asked me to call him Danny, and so I will. He's the Blanchard Chair in Old Testament at Wheaton College Graduate School. He's also an adjunct professor at the Theological Seminary in Central America, which is in Guatemala City, Guatemala. He previously taught at Denver Seminary, where he founded IDEAL, a Spanish language training program, and he's the author and editor of several books. And specifically today, we're going to talk about a book entitled Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible, in its second edition. So, Danny, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, so we here on Connecting Faith are wandering around in all of the aspects of these immigration and migration issues. And so I think that the audience now understands we're talking about something that is very complex, even though the rhetoric is often, too overly simplified. So if you would, help us frame the immigration conversation from a distinctively Christian perspective.
Yeah, I'd say a couple things. One thing I find is helpful, for instance, I just got back from Spain night before last, and they're dealing with immigration issues. I was talking to someone also from Colombia, and they have had to take in about 1 million out of Venezuela because of all the issues going on. And what we're seeing, I'm just giving you those examples, this is a global challenge. And so this isn't a U.S. alone issue. So I think as Christians, what we need to do is to begin to kind of step back and see this is a global issue that demands a response from the people of God. And the thing that the process that began for me a number of years ago was when I started getting into this for personal reasons, which we can get to if you'd like, but I didn't know what the Bible had to say, and the more I got into it, the more I began to see that the Bible has a lot to say about it. So I think the first thing Christians need to do is to be aware of the magnitude of the issue, and really for the U.S., it's small compared to some other countries. But secondly, how would the Scriptures guide us in formulating not only right attitudes, but making some suggestions for ministry, and then some suggestions even for public policy.
All right, well, let's go there. What does the Bible have to say And how can we be informed by, you know, by the Bible as we consider, you know, day to day, how we think about these things, and then also how we think about public policy here in the United States?
Well, I think one of the places to begin is go to, you know, chapter one of Genesis. I mean, that's the place that I would go to begin at the beginning. And one of the things, there's several things come out of that chapter, but one that's interesting to me is that it says that we are made in the image of God, and we're supposed to multiply and fill the earth. Well, that is already kind of cluing us that filling the earth is going to require movement. And so what I would say that we need to realize is that migration is part of what it means to be human. This is the history of humanity, is the history of migration, whether it's going to another town looking for a job, or in this country, you know, crossing state lines for whatever reason. For some people, it's more than crossing state lines. It's crossing national boundaries. So I think the first thing we have to realize is this is the history of humanity, and what we're seeing today is nothing new. What is challenging is not the phenomenon itself, but the sheer numbers that are on the move. The United Nations tells us there's over 230 million people on the move right now. So I think the place to begin is with that, and then move to the image of God discussion. Not only are we of supreme worth because we're all made in the image of God, but then there's another piece that I think can help change the tone of conversation in Genesis 1, where we're also told to subdue and to rule over the earth. And what that tells us is that humans, and this would include immigrants, refugees, have incredible potential. So it's not just receiving them as a burden out of generosity that we need to find in our souls, which is part of it, but also realizing all the incredible contributions that these people can make to national life, which is the history of this country as well. This country has been founded on waves of migration over the last 250 years. So that's where I would begin. And then once you move into the Old Testament, you have many stories of migration. You have a lot of legislation for migration, which is unique in the ancient world. You move even into the New Testament. And Jesus, of course, is moving, running away from Herod, seeking asylum in Egypt. That would be the modern word for it. And then when you move into the book of Acts, what you see is that we're commanded to go to all the earth. And in a sense, God is asking the church to migrate to complete its mission. And when you go in the book of Acts, that's exactly what you're seeing. You see all these diaspora communities reaching out all to their neighbors. And I mean, so what you see, Carmen, is just this move across the scriptures.
Okay, friends, I'm talking with Danny Carroll, and he is an Old Testament professor, and so we are going to spend a little more time here, Danny, in this particular conversation, because one of the things that you just said, I imagine people might have missed, and I want you to talk a little bit more about that. You said that there's actually legislation for migration in the Old Testament. Because I've read the book, I know what you're talking about. But I don't think other people would necessarily know what you mean when you say that. And I think this is a critical point for people to understand in terms of a biblical worldview. So what do you mean when you talk about legislation for migration in the Old Testament?
Well, what I mean is this. If we can appreciate that migration is something that goes back to the beginning of human history, what you see then is that every civilization, every country in the history of the world has had to deal with people coming in and leaving. I mean, so that shouldn't surprise us that in the ancient world that they would be cognizant of and try to deal with migration into their lands. I mean, we see this in Genesis when a number of the patriarchs migrate to Egypt looking for food. I mean, this is very common. So we know the Egyptians were very aware of this, and that's another discussion we can get into if you'd like. But what we find in the Old Testament then, not surprisingly, is legislation to deal with outsiders. Now, what is unique to Old Testament legislation is the sheer number of laws, which is unique in every other law code that we have in the ancient world. There is no other law code that, on the one hand, treats the immigrant with so much detail, and secondly, that treats them in such a constructive and welcoming way. I mean, that is also unique. Oftentimes in the ancient world, when people would migrate into another place, they would do so as slaves or prisoners of war, and would be abused or taken advantage of. But what we see in the Old Testament is something very different, and I think it's grounded in the faith of Israel.
All right, so let's touch on one New Testament idea before we have to take a break, because one of the things that you talk about is this idea of our being strangers in a strange land, and this is a fitting metaphor for being a Christian. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, what is fascinating is what God does, and here, you know, if you go to like 1 Peter chapters 1 and 2, where we're called as strangers in a strange land, is that what you see in the New Testament is doing, it's picking up the metaphor or taking migration as a metaphor for what it means to be a Christian. And the idea is that we have another king, another citizenship. We have a different set of values, different kinds of families, and all these kinds of things. We should feel very strange in the place that we live, because we are strange in the world's eyes. The problem that we have in this country and other places around the world is that it doesn't seem strange anymore. We rather like it here, and now we want to keep the strangers out. We've lost our strangeness. And what I tell people, even when I speak to Hispanic congregations, because I'm half Guatemalan, so I can do this in Spanish too, but is that the more we know about migration and immigration, the more we'll begin to understand what it means to be a Christian. So you've changed the whole tone of the conversation. And what I tell, you know, the Latino churches I speak in is, La Iglesia Angla nos necesita. I mean, the Anglo church needs us. You see, they need us to remind them of what it means to be strange. An immigrant knows what it means to be strange, the accents, the customs, the food, the nonverbal communication, all of these things are strange to the outsider, the American way of doing things. They know what it means to be strange. So I think this is one of the things that the New Testament does. It reminds us that we need to remember that we're strangers. We need to go back, even as in ancient Israel, the reminder, remember that once you lived somewhere else. And we need to remember as Christians that we have another citizenship, another way of doing things and doing life together. And we are strangers. We need to understand migration for the sake of our own health of the Christian church.
All right, friends. So we're going to have more of this conversation with Danny Carroll immediately following the break. Our subject matter is immigration and the way that we as Christians think about this issue and even think about ourselves as a part of God's people who are deployed in a strange land. So I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll be right back. Friends, welcome back. You're listening to Connecting Faith. My conversation partner today is Dr. Danny Carroll. He is the Blanchard Chair in Old Testament at Wheaton College Graduate School. He is also an adjunct professor of a seminary in Guatemala City, Guatemala. If you had all afternoon with him, he would want to tell you that he is half Guatemalan, and so he enters into these conversations with a different level of understanding of the perspective, particularly of Latino people who are here in the United States or seeking to be here in the United States. And so he has a fantastic book that I highly recommend. It's Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. But I think that, Danny, let's jump in with your story, sort of how you got into this conversation. And then from there, let's talk about the situation that those who are already in the U.S. but who are undocumented, what's the reality that they face? So let's have those two parts of the conversation.
Well, as I mentioned, I'm half Guatemalan. My mother was Guatemalan, so I spent some time there growing up. We'd spend almost every summer of my youth in Guatemala, and sometimes for months at a time. And then as an adult, I went there to teach at a seminary for about 13 years with my own family, and our sons were born there. So all this idea of migration and Latinos, I mean, this is just part of my background. I was raised bilingual and bicultural. So when we moved back to the States, this would have been 1996, that's when I began to first hear the conversation in this country. We were having issues of migration in Guatemala at the time because of the various wars in Central America. So people were coming from El Salvador and Nicaragua and all these kinds of things. But when I moved to the States, I began to hear the conversation. And what got me into this whole thing was that I would talk to people who claim the Christian faith, but there was nothing Christian about their conversation. And so that's how I got into the Bible part. And because I am half Guatemalan, I began to attend a Latino church. We started a Latino program at the seminary. And there I began to hear the personal stories of the undocumented and how they had come and what they had risked to get here. And so that's how I got into it. And then, of course, as you get into it, that's when you start probing and learning more and more about immigration legislation, which has a history in this country, which most people don't know either.
Okay. And so, friends, if you were to get the book, Christians at the Border, the first half of the book actually, or the first part of the book, explores the history of immigration and immigration law here in the United States. And Danny, one of the things that I think many people do not understand is that if a person is already here and they are undocumented, there is actually no way, there is no process through which they can rectify that situation. And so our choices are we either punish them or we figure out how to be redemptive. And in order to do that, we need comprehensive immigration reform. So can you talk about, let me just tell us one of the personal stories, the individual stories that you know of a person, you know, who is here who doesn't have any way to rectify their situation.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that the nature of U.S. immigration law is about entry as it stands now. So this is the discussion about the border and the wall. It's about entry. Now, the problem with current U.S. legislation is that as it stands now, it has nothing to deal with those who are already inside. The only thing that current law contemplates if you're inside is deportation. So we have 11-plus million people inside, and the mean stay now is over a decade, which current law has nothing to offer. And so all the discussion about the border, in one sense, is irrelevant to this huge population because they're already in. And so even if you take care of the border, you still haven't dealt with, you know, the presence of these other people. That's the issue. Now, what people think oftentimes is that there must be an office or a fine or something. They just don't want to get right with the law. But see, if you understand that current law doesn't even contemplate any solution except deportation, then you realize that there is actually nothing that they can do, no office, no line, no fine, nothing they can do to rectify their situation. Now, what happens as I, you know, would attend an Hispanic church is that now this becomes a topic within the church itself, because now if people I would know would get picked up. And some of it was, to be honest, racial profiling. A friend of mine, so he was stopped. The police car actually followed him for several blocks, waiting for him to make a mistake, and he didn't, but they pulled him over anyway, and they took him away. You know, wife and three kids, and two of the three born here. So you get that thing going on with this particular family where you have mixed legal status. So both parents without documentation, their oldest son who came when he was 1 year old, without documents, and then two other children who were actually born here and were therefore U.S. citizens. So you have the trauma of this family, not knowing what's going to happen to their father. The mother's also undocumented. And then what you find, too, is that they get hired for low-paying jobs, construction, nannies, house cleaning, things like that, without any kind of protections in terms of even minimum wage. So what you have then is what we find in Hispanic churches is and populations, a higher incidence of alcohol and drug abuse because of the constant pressure day-to-day that they have of just even getting to and from work, and the kids not knowing if when they get home their parents may not be there or one of them may not be there. So that's what you have on the kind of the underside. Oftentimes the discussion is about how do Anglos respond to the presence of these people. Another conversation is daily life of these people who most of them are just working 8 to 5 or longer, oftentimes 7 days a week. So there's another side to how those stories are handled.
Okay, if folks want to engage on these issues, if they want to, you know, allow the Bible to orient their approach to these things, if they want to have help knowing knowing what to do and how to engage, tell us a little bit about the second half of Christians at the Border, because in the book, I really feel like you do equip people in this area.
Right. Because I'm an Old Testament prophet, I spend most of the time in the Old Testament. And what we have in the Old Testament law, of course, is an ancient law code. So you can't replicate how they would do this because it was an agrarian society, you know, several thousand years ago. But what we have in these laws is, I think, a reflection of the heart of God. A passage, if your listeners are jotting this down, would be Deuteronomy 4, verses 5 to 8, where it talks about these laws becoming a model and a witness to God. So if we understand these laws revealing the heart of God, and this is how they did it in the ancient world in that agrarian society, then the question is, how do we reflect the same commitments and the same virtues and the same values in a 21st century, you know, modernized technological world? It's going to look different, but that would be what I would say about using the Old Testament for immigration. Then, of course, you've got to give the whole discussion of Christians and the state, and depending on your denomination and your theological tradition, you know, if you're an Anabaptist or Amish, you know, you don't get involved with the state, right? But if you're more of the Reform tradition, I think that's your tradition, Carmen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very natural move because Christ is Lord of the earth and things like this. So it's a more natural move in the Reform tradition. In the Lutheran tradition, it's a little more complex. So they have the idea of the two kingdoms, and it's a little more suspicious of the government. So what you have then is the Bible giving us a set of values to engage the issue. The question now is, as Christians, how do we do this? And some of it, like I said, is determined by your church tradition. And then we also can learn from immigration legislation history in this country and around the world, actually.
Okay, before we let you go, and again, friends, the book is Christians at the Border. And if you want to understand the history of immigration and immigration law here in the United States, if you want to understand from a biblical perspective, you know, like how to orient yourself to develop an authentically biblical and Christian approach to the conversations around immigration and migration, I would just highly recommend this particular book, Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. Before we let you go, and thank you so much for being so gracious with your time today, Danny, I'm wondering if you can just speak a word of encouragement to those who are listening right now, who have friends, who have fellow church members, you know, who have colleagues who are here undocumented, and just speak a word of encouragement in terms of like, what should I do as a Christian who recognizes the very difficult status of my neighbor?
I think one of the things that we can do is just to verbally encourage. What happens is immigrants will watch the news on certain news outlets, and it can be very negative. And so they will tend to withdraw and keep quiet, not talk about these things. So I think if we can just begin to talk and to engage with them as humans and engage with them as brothers and sisters and their children, things like this, that would be a very wonderful move, just to encourage them that they are being valued. And then if you're in a church, there's all kinds of things one can do. I mean, whether it's after-school tutoring, whether it's helping with English classes, sometimes having them over into your home, and just begin to humanize the whole discussion. I think that's the minimum that we can do, you know, as we wait and try to lobby for different kinds of legislation. What we can do in the meantime is to humanize our contacts with these people as Christians.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, friends, that's Danny Carroll. I would encourage you, again, if you are looking for some more robust equipping on this subject, the book is Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. Dr. Carroll, thank you so – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say real quickly, there's two editions. So the second edition is updated and expanded. So if your listeners are looking for the book, be sure to get the second edition. It's the white cover. The other one is a bit dated, so I just wanted to throw that in.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today on Connecting Faith.
It was a privilege. Thank you so much.
All right, friends, we got to take one more quick break. When I come back, we're going to make the connecting point with Pastor Rondell Trevino. Don't go away. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. We're talking all week about the subject of immigration. It's complex. It's deeply personal. And it's something that we as Christians need to, we need to be not only paying attention to, we need to be seeing the people who are often hiding in the shadows and really very much need us. If we are in a position to not only recognize the challenges that they're facing, but actually advocate on their behalf, then we need to be doing that. So joining me here for the Connecting Point is Rondell Trevino. You can follow him on Twitter, and I would recommend this. If you're on Twitter, please follow him at Rondell_Trevino. And you can check out what he's doing at theimmigrationproject.com. That's theimmigrationproject.com. Rondell, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you for having me, Carmen. I appreciate y'all. Appreciate you and everything that you're doing.
Okay, so I am definitely going to get together with you because I want to hear your whole story. Today, we got to be kind of quick in our conversation, so I'm going to keep it tight.
Yeah.
You are now a pastor, and you serve in the state of Tennessee. And at the top of the hour, we actually read a headline here about action taken yesterday in the state of Tennessee. And I can tell by your Twitter feed, you have heard from a lot of your friends and neighbors about this. So specifically, what happened in your state and what kinds of conversations are you having with people affected?
Yes. So just recently, Governor Haslam of Tennessee allowed a bill to pass. He didn't sign it, but him not signing it still allowed the bill to pass. The bill is HB 2315. And that would require local police officers in throughout Tennessee to basically embrace Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they're tasked to question and detain undocumented immigrants. And so, ever since it's been passed, since yesterday, I've had a ton of immigrants. Undocumented immigrants predominantly calling me, even when they heard the news it was passed. I had about 24 undocumented immigrant families contact me and just in fear. They're already in fear because of the xenophobia that we hear and people just fearful of them in general just because they are undocumented. And so we have tried to figure out ways to, and right now we're in the process of figuring out ways to protect them. I do tell individuals we're for ICE and police officers detaining sex traffickers, drug traffickers, and people who don't help the community flourish. But a lot of times the ones who are being detained and separated from their families are undocumented immigrants who have been here 10, 15 years, work hard, are members of churches, and have a family, and they just want to work hard and help the community thrive. And they do. They do do that. And so a lot of them are in fear, so much so where I have some asking me to take them to church on Sunday because they're afraid that they might be stopped on their way to church, and all they want to do is worship the Lord. And so this is kind of what we're feeling, the pulse right now of the fear in the immigrant community. And, you know, and one of the biggest things is helping the Christian community view immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants, as made in the image of God. Yes, they broke the law. It is against Romans 13, 1 through 4. I agree with that. And there needs to be some kind of significant fine. But we also are called to show compassion and mercy and love them in the midst of that. And so this is what we're dealing with. I just continue to hear more fear. I'm in conversations like crazy right now on figuring out ways that we can help somehow build a chauffeuring app on a phone or some kind of app that allows undocumented immigrants to be in connection with one another so that they can somehow figure out to be a little bit more safer in our community. So.
All right. So, Rundell, tell people about the Immigration Project. And again, friends, you can check it out at theimmigrationproject.com. But tell us about what they're going to find when they go there to the website.
Yeah. So the Immigration Project, our mission is to inspire the church to view immigration and love immigrants the way God intended. And some of the ways we do that is we equip churches on viewing immigration from an orthodoxy perspective, right thinking, what the Bible says about the immigrant theologically, but also leading to loving them, because love is an action, loving them, orthopraxy, right practice. And then we also advocate biblically, and so we were advocating against the bill that just was recently passed. We had pastors and leaders helping us advocate against it. And then we also write articles, up-to-date articles, on issues of immigration so that we can help equip individuals to think biblically about different issues going on. And then we also have a partnership with a local college, Memphis Center for Urban Theological Studies, and they're in partnership with Lancaster Bible College. And we have a partnership where we give full tuition scholarships to DACA recipients. Right now we have 6 DACA recipients who are just finished their first semester, all with 4.0 GPAs. And so we're excited about that program. But, yeah, we want to help the church. We feel like the biggest problem out there is wrong thinking when it comes to immigrants. You know, Lifeway Research in 2015 said that 12% of evangelical Christians primarily choose to view immigration from the Bible. And this has been disheartening, but it's also a privilege and honor for us as Christians to step up and to equip the church to view immigration from a biblical perspective first, before the media or fear or xenophobia. And then we also want to help them find ways to practically love immigrants in our community, but also learning to understand that as Christians we have a right to also advocate for legislation that lines up with biblical principles. So we're in the thick of it when it comes to that in the Southeast, and we're really excited about what God is doing.
Okay, friends. So on Twitter, he's Rondell_Trevino. And online, you want to check out theimmigrationproject.com. So, Rondell, yesterday a listener named Nancy emailed me after the show, and she has this question. You may or may not be able to answer it, but I really want my listeners to hear it. And even hear if the answer is discouraging, which I anticipate it might be. So here's Nancy's question.
Okay.
I have a friend who's from Mexico. She's been trying to obtain her U.S. citizenship for more than 10 years. She's a cancer survivor. She has 2 young boys. And 5 weeks ago, she gave birth to a baby girl. It's a miracle. She does not have a work visa. Mm-hmm. And she has been working as a kitchen supervisor in Chicago, but she wants to move to Minnesota. She wants to get her citizenship secured so that she can work and raise her children in freedom. Can you give me some information on how I could best direct her or what kinds of questions I need to ask her?
Yeah, some of the best ways when I come in contact with that is finding one of the best organizations out there. Even my wife's an immigrant, and one of the best organizations is Catholic Charities. They're a nonprofit, so the people that they work for, the price, as opposed to a lawyer, you can go to a lawyer, but Catholic Charities, as opposed to a lawyer, is way cheaper and more affordable for the immigrant community. And so there's Catholic Charities all around the country, and so that's what I would tell her, is to figure out first if there's a Catholic Charities organization around, because they do have an immigration department, and to seek out to see if they can help her become get right with the law. The fact is, and I'm sure you've heard and many do, is it's when you're undocumented in a situation like this individual, like she's been waiting 10 plus years, a lot of times we need immigration reform because of the fact that there's no way to get right with the law. They're just not aligned to get in. And so as Christians, we're constantly advocating for legislation from a 50,000 foot level to pass comprehensive immigration reform that secures the border, but also allows undocumented immigrants to come out of the shadows, to go through intense background checks, but also earn legalized status. But that would be my first initial encouragement. It was to find a local Catholic Charities, and if not, a local lawyer, immigration attorney, and figure out what they can do on that front. But more importantly, one thing about this story that we see is she has a child. She's trying her hardest to get right with the law. She's a good person. This is the majority of undocumented immigrants in our midst. And a lot of times they get categorized as animals, rapists, molesters, people who are just horrific criminals, when that's just not the case. And as Christians, if we can see them as made in the image of God, and that the gospel of Jesus Christ will compel us to engage with them, and then we'll begin to understand their story, hear their story, and become like that individual and help undocumented immigrants get right with the law. So,
yeah. All right. Well, thank you. So, Nancy, hopefully you have access to it. Well, I know you do because you sent me an email. So, you know, go online, check out CatholicCharitiesUSA.org. There's a tab on their website called Immigration Refugee Services. So that's CatholicCharitiesUSA.org. Rondell, that's a great answer to her question. All right. So you and I are going to have to continue this conversation probably later this summer. But I wanted to introduce you to our listening audience and to invite them to visit TheImmigrationProject.com in order that you might begin supplying resources to their churches and move people into a distinctively
yes.
Christian witness on this subject.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today, Rondell.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Okay, friends, I do, in the remainder of the week, I know the week is going by quickly, and some of you are feeling like I've sidelined you from the conversation, and I certainly don't want to do that. So I do want your feedback. I do want to hear your questions. I do want to, you know, see how you're, you know, how are you feeling in response to the conversation that we're trying to provoke related to immigration and the need for comprehensive immigration reform here in the U.S. and how we as Christians can authentically engage in the conversations at the, you know, like at the coffee cup level and conversations at the Capitol Hill level. Like, I want us to be equipped to engage, you know, at all of those different levels. So send me an email, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. You can leave me a message at 877-93-FAITH. And both tomorrow and Friday, I'm gonna definitely dedicate part of the show to taking your calls live on the air during the show. So if you're a person who, you know, you've had something you've wanted to say all week, either send me an email, Carmen@myfaithradio.com, or give me a call, 877-93-FAITH. That is just about all the time we have got today. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You can join the conversation online at reconnectwithcarmen.com or via Twitter. I'm @CarmenLaBurge. That's all we got time for today. Have a great day, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.